Doug Tyrrell, History and Comment is available on iTunes.
Hello, friends. I'm Doug Tyrrell. This is History and Comment for Wednesday, the 3rd of April, 2024. It's been a busy week, and I still have some unfinished business from the past weekend. The government structure in England has taken centuries to evolve to what they have today. In 1721, Robert Walpole became what is effectively the first prime minister. He was in a powerful position when a business scandal took down many in other high offices. William Tweed is born in 1823. How he rose to power is a convoluted story, but he became the head of New York City's Tammany Hall, the proxy government that ran the city and reaped the profits via graft and corruption. The Pony Express begins its first successful run in 1860. Riders departed St. Joseph, Missouri, then the furthest city west in the United States, and launching point for many wagon trains and a trip to California. The Pony Express terminal in California was Sacramento, also the center of the gold industry. While the Pony Express has forged a place in Western history, its actual life was quite short, just 18 months from inception to bankruptcy, replaced by the first transcontinental telegraph line. A letter on the Pony Express took 10 days to move between Missouri and California. When the first telegraph line went into operation in October of 1861, the Pony Express ceased operation 2 days later. The new technology, while much faster, was not cheap. During the first days of operation, a message cost $1 per word, or about $34 today. But it would arrive within hours. It is quite difficult for us today to comprehend a world where communications are not in real time. I recall placing a phone call to Hawaii. It seems surreal to talk a quarter of the way around the world in real time. Today, that is commonplace. Federal troops capture the Confederate capital of Richmond, Virginia in 1865, and the end is in sight for the Civil War, at least the open fighting. Tensions will remain high for the remainder of the 19th century. Jesse James is an iconic figure in the Old West, but he really isn't Western. He spent much of his life in and around his home in Missouri, and he was something of a Robin Hood, or helping some folks while terrorizing others. But that is pure folklore and not based in fact. He was part of the guerrilla war in Missouri during and after the Civil War. He might have been the first to utter the phrase, "Lee surrendered, I did not." On this day in 1882, he is killed not in a shootout, but in the back, in his living room, by a recent recruit to the gang. But even that was part of a much larger plot by the governor. Robert Ford is arrested, charged, tried, convicted, and pardoned within 48 hours. Gottlieb Daimler receives a patent for a four-stroke engine in 1885. A few months later, he uses the motor to build the world's first motorcycle. The first of 11 unsolved murders in London's East End is committed in 1888 and laid to the charge of Jack the Ripper. It is uncertain if all of the murders were related. Scholars believe five were and maybe others not. It might have been three or more perpetrators. What is certain, it was not the first serial murder, but one of the first to receive worldwide attention. Joseph Stalin rises to the top of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union in 1922. He will lead the Union until 1952. It will take a few years for him to fully develop into a dictator, but it will happen, and millions will die at the hand of his policies. In 1 5-year period, as many as 700,000 political dissidents will be executed. That's almost 400 per day. Ask yourself why some government policies need a police force to enact. This is in fairly direct opposition to freedom and liberty, and this does not apply just to the old Soviet Union. The whole idea is simply that a ruling elite believes they know better how to run individuals' lives rather than the individual. Furthermore, they are willing to use deadly force. A couple of weeks back, I mentioned a cartoon of an IRS agent knocking on a door demanding 30% of the resident's income. From inside, the resident asks, "Why?" To which the agent replies, "To protect you." "From what?" "From what I will do to you if you do not give me 30% of your income." Now that would appear to be a little less than typical street extortion, otherwise known as protection money. And in fact, that's exactly what it is, just on a grand scale. It would be nice if high school history classes actually studied some history. A couple of weeks on the philosophy of President Woodrow Wilson and the direct line between him, FDR, Truman, Johnson, and Obama. We might want to add Mr. Biden to that list. All have made great strides in moving away from the idea of the individual and towards the collective, completely opposed to the ideal of the founding fathers. Wilson had the income tax, FDR, Truman, and Johnson enacted social programs, Obama made it a plank in his platform to remake America. All use the force of the government against the people to build government and, quote, protect the people. Beware of the push against the common automobile. Pay no attention to the reasons given. They are little more than a smokescreen. A highly mobile population is a threat to government, as is the idea of personal property. Yes, that sounds like I'm falling into the tinfoil hat crowd, but consider history over the past 100 years in this country and others. Primate researcher Jane Goodall is 90 years old today. Actor Alec Baldwin is 66, while comedian Eddie Murphy is 63. Engineers with Motorola and Bell Labs make the first handheld mobile phone call in 1973. In 1975, the mass evacuation from South Vietnam begins with children, much like the Confederacy. It's all over but the shout. Congress is still trying to iron out relations with native tribes in 1980. If you want to see how well people fare with tight government oversight and bureaucracy, you do not need to study the Soviet Union. Just look at the reservation system, and I will rest my case. Or, as Rinaldus Magnus said, the most feared words are, "I'm from the government, and I'm here to help." The first successful portable computer is unveiled in 1981, the Osborne 1, with a tiny character-only screen about 5 inches in size and weighed about 40 pounds. It was hardly functional compared to today's smartphones, but groundbreaking for the day. Unabomber Theodore Kaczynski is captured in 1996. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia rules in 2000 that Microsoft has violated antitrust laws and kept an oppressive thumb on competition. Apple releases the first iPad in 2010. No matter your religious thoughts, you know that Sunday was Easter, marking the resurrection of Jesus, and considered the highest holy day on the Christian calendar. It is simply mind-boggling that the president would declare it a celebration for transgenderism. Even a Sunday would be a sacrilege. Folks, that was not done on a whim by an addled old man whose faculties are in question. The line from the film Hunt for Red October comes to mind. "Son, the Soviets do not take a dump without a plan." More than a few folks in the highest levels of government signed off on that. And you can be certain the implications were considered. On a more reverent point, a quote from Chuck Colson made the rounds. Now, if you've forgotten, Chuck Colson was special counsel to President Nixon, commonly known as his hatchet man and one of the 7 White House staff deeply involved in the Watergate affair. He reflected on his time in the White House, just steps away from the Oval Office, the Watergate affair and its implications on the gospel. How 11 of the 12 disciples died as martyrs, yet remained steadfast to the concept of the resurrection of Christ. Colson pointed out that 7 of the most powerful men in the world could not keep a secret for a few weeks. The historicity of Jesus and his ministry is not in question by any serious scholar. The only question is, did he rise from the dead? That point moves the discussion beyond mortal and clearly into the supernatural. Colson makes the point that men will not die for a point they know is untrue. Certainly not maintain the deception for decades and in remote places. Yet these 12 common men who had first-hand knowledge of the events maintained the narrative to the death. Where does that place us today? The narrative in the book of John, Jesus meets Thomas and addresses his doubts directly, then comments that blessed are those who have not seen yet believed. Certainly we have two millennia to cloud the issue, but the question is, do we actually believe? The narrative is that God appeared to man and made the point that he is approachable, loving, and forgiving. If we take this to heart and actually believe it, it should radically transform us. Yet most of us are apathetical. So, do we really believe? Personally, I like the passage in Mark chapter 9. Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. That's History in Comment for the third day of April. I'm Doug Terrell. Now, go do something worth remembering.